Well, let's start with this, a fairly open-ended question then. How did we get here, and how did it happen so quickly?
You know, it's amazing, but the two things I think need to be considered. For a long time, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, when the election results happened, I thought, well, we just the country's in trouble. Yes, but the country made a mistake. But I had to amend that. I think the voters made a mistake. The people of the country made a mistake when they bought into the kind of charade that this man offers. There's this whole concept of Americans believing that wealth and celebrity are of value and need to be honored and appreciated and sought. And in fact, the way they translate it is wealth means wisdom and celebrity means significance. And neither is true. But that's a kind of thing that got stuck in our heads somewhere a long time ago. So, you know, he made a lot of noise. He poked the right buttons, I guess, for a lot of people about race and about immigration and about the price of eggs or whatever it was, and got himself elected, disavowing Project 2025, which is really what's at work here. And we have elected ourselves a man who is, in my view, very mentally ill, and is deeply involved in today. What we're seeing is reaction to anybody who has ever done him a slight, because he has this, again, this is my opinion, of course, this mental need to be absolutely right, and to be the most right, if you will, correct person, and everybody just simply has to bow and scrape and give him props for being right about everything. And if they don't, there's trouble.
And nowhere, Mike, from what I've seen, nowhere is that more apparent when you see this, I don't know, Kremlin-like ceremony that goes on with these public displays of affection for him at cabinet meetings, where everyone has to stop and bow and tell him what wonderful things he's doing.
Well, this is the dear leader syndrome. I mean, this is really the stuff that that we've all feared, those of us who can see through him. But he's facilitated by a couple of aspects. Cowards, totally. I mean, forgive me, but those Republican Congress people who are doing all this bowing and scraping, and his appointees in the cabinet and his staff now, are really cowardly, because most of them, other than those who are ideologically so driven that they support this kind of dear leader setup for our country, other than those, it's just cowardly. They fear him. They fear his retribution, and they fear stepping out of line. But there are also some very crafty, I believe, fascistic, racist, if you will, forgive me, white Christian nationalist Americans who are intent on moving this country in a direction, and they see him as the tool by which to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've said for a while there appear to be only two types of people left at the upper reaches of the Republican Party: cowards and opportunists.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. And I don't know which is worse. I mean, cowards are those who fail us, but opportunists are the ones who are driving this. I think the Project 2025 people, and they really have an agenda. Cowards just sort of go along with whatever's going on as long as it doesn't hurt them. But these people with an agenda to declare America the America that they believe is appropriate, the one that's for white people and for Christians only and men. You know, women who speak up, as your governor has learned, are attacked, are in any way they can, punished for having the audacity to speak up to this poor, sad individual who thinks he knows everything.
Well, and even the opportunists, I think, fail to understand the lessons of history. And whether you're in politics, whether you're a billionaire oligarch, the lessons are that that guy's coming for you at some point. You might be getting what you want right now, but his only loyalty is to himself, and eventually you'll be in the crosshairs too.
I think that's absolutely right, Rich, but I'm not sure if they don't recognize that or if they are seeing beyond him. I have a fear that he is so mad that he's not going to serve 4 years, and that means this, I don't even know how to start, this man, this Vance character who brought himself up, he says, by his own bootstraps, has nothing but a power agenda, and he's willing to give, I think he's willing to give over to anybody who has an idea that serves him.
And bankrolled completely by Peter Thiel.
Indeed. And his compatriots. Yeah. No, it's really a scary time, I think, Rich. And I must say, I appreciate and support your courage in being willing to speak out on these issues, because it's what's happening to the country is really scary to me and enrages me, frankly, when things like this poor fellow Garcia now in prison in El Salvador. I spent some time in El Salvador, as you may remember.
Yes, absolutely. I was going to ask you about that. You've seen this, and you've seen this authoritarian playbook up close and personal in your time.
Indeed I have, and it is an ugly thing to see, and it is dispiriting, and it drives one to despair, and for me I find it enraging to the point that I find it hard sometimes to articulate it, that we have allowed ourselves to be gulled by this man and the people around him, who I think are manipulating him as much as they are listening to him and allowing him to lead. They allow him to lead in whatever direction they choose.
We've destroyed alliances around the world, and the laundry list of what's being done to dismantle 80 years of progress. We could do several entire shows on that. I think the thing that I am most angry about, frustrated about, are the human rights abuses for a country that, again, was, or at least strived to be, the beacon of liberty, portrayed ourselves as the country that would help other countries figure out how to do it right and treat people properly. And now, you know, we're locking arms with dictators, whether they're tin horns like this guy in El Salvador or whether it's Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not sure what the relationship is between Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin, but I think it's a lot deeper than people have allowed themselves to realize. And I don't mean deeper in that sense by an open, necessarily, conspiracy, but I think Putin is very good at manipulating Mr. Trump and may have some evidence that would suggest that he has power over him. That's been talked about, and I don't know, of course, the truth, but it's a possibility. But you're quite right. It's the autocrats of the world are people who live in a kind of heady dream for themselves, but for nobody else. I was, as you probably remember, I was the co-chair of Human Rights Watch in California for many years. We established it out here, and the number one human rights is the right to life, and people are losing their lives today because of Donald Trump and his supporters. And because of people around the world who are now gaining favor with Donald Trump as a result of his this terrible, terrible conduct that, as you've just said, is destroying the basis of the inter-American, inter-world relationship based on certain fundamental premises that are now being trashed, being abandoned by this group. And I say group because I think it is a group. I don't think he's doing this all on his own.
And I want to think the best of my fellow citizens, but it gets harder every day when you see them, if not embrace, at least accept the level of cruelty that's inherent in all of this policy, whether it's toward immigrants, the LGBTQ plus community, women, anybody who's in a vulnerable position. The cruelty seems to, for many of these people, be a feature and not a bug.
Yeah, well said. And I think people, it's easy for some to say, oh, well, you know, this invasion that's coming. They throw out these words. Immigration in our country has given us the strength and power that we've had to build the greatest nation in the history of the world. And it came from all ranks of people, all countries, all races. And yet it becomes this toy that he can toss out, calling all these people rape. They're sending their worst. They're sending their killers and their rapists and their bandits and their what have you. And he does so with alacrity, and people just allow themselves to say, well, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe there is some aspect to this. Instead of what you just said, instead of standing up and saying, this is nonsense. It is antithetical to everything we stand for in this country. It's antithetical to what our fundamental premises state. And we are debasing the very thing that we have established over time to become the leading nation in the history of the world. And we are doing that. We've done that historically because we are a generous and graceful and thoughtful nation that believes that everybody has certain rights. All people have basic fundamental human rights. And we've established international relationships based on that premise. And they are being trashed by this administration without a second thought, apparently.
And we're seeing this in other countries. It's not just happening here, although the pace is certainly greater here than many places around the world. And I'm wondering what drives that anti-immigrant fueled populism that has become the flavor of the decade here. I'm sure it's a combination of things. Is it a response to technology? Is it a feeling of powerlessness that has increased in people in the last 10 or 15 years?
Well, I think that's a good bet. When we look at climate change, we look at the possibility of the planet being uninhabitable in the future. I don't know, I want to say when. When we look at the kind of way things have gone pell-mell in terms of values, and kids have gotten out of whack because of too much time spending looking at screens instead of talking to their friends and playing. There's so many things that are happening in our lives that I think frighten people and leave people a bit off-center. And we had a COVID pandemic here in this country that really set us back, I think, in significant ways, not only financially, but educationally, kids out of school and stuff. So I think there are aspects of our society today, aspects of the world in which we live, that have caused some fear and a little bit of anxiety in the minds of a lot of people. So when a supposed strong man stands up and says, I will solve your problem. I'll be your retribution, is what Trump is. I will solve your problems, essentially. And that happens in other countries as well, as you've said. Hungary, Turkey, not only, you know, those. Bukele in El Salvador, who's just a tyrant, who solved the public's problem with gangs, and there was a big problem in Salvador with gangs, but he took the heavy hand and put them all in jail, right or wrong, guilty or innocent, treated them like less than human, and became a hero. So there is a kind of tendency on the parts of frightened people to look for a savior. And these guys are not saving anything but themselves. It's hard to get people to see past that.
And you talk about the idolatry of the super wealthy. Mm-hmm. And so when Elon Musk comes in, and there are people who I think legitimately believe, well, he doesn't need any more money. He's not going to try and help himself. This is a genuine effort to reduce our bloated government. And look, I think most Americans would agree that our government is due for some reform to try and become more efficient. And I think people would embrace that if Trump and his cohort had come in and done that the proper way, going through Congress, having open debate and discussions. But I'm just baffled by these people that don't see what to me is obvious, that Musk is doing all of this purely to help himself.
I couldn't agree more. Here's a man who identifies himself as being on the spectrum. And I have to say, my experience with people on the autism spectrum, which is what he implies, is that they are not cruel and they are not heartless and they are not people who are trying to climb over the bodies of people in order to get themselves in a higher spot. So now he is suddenly the most wealthy human being in the world, and look at the behavior. Look at the incredibly ugly and brutal and mindless and heartless behavior that he's responsible for. For creating an organization that is traducing and taking the heart out of the government institutions that have been established to try and make the lives of Americans safer and better.
And Trump has put together such a collection of unqualified people to work with him in the cabinet, and maybe because I work in schools and with young people, when I see what Robert Kennedy Jr. is doing with our healthcare system, and again, I believe in some of what he's saying. We could certainly do a better job with making Americans healthier by changing some of our habits, by making our food safer. But then the continued denial of the efficacy of vaccines is just stunning. And we're seeing the result of that right now, ripping through the state of Texas and others.
Yes, indeed. And Bobby, as his friends would call him, has been repudiated by his family in large part because of his overreach and his, it's a little hard to understand, frankly, because he started out as a pretty smart lawyer who was doing good things in terms of the climate issues.
Right.
And power, I don't know, power seems, you know, they say power corrupts, and you see evidence of it in him writ large. A man with the mantle of a family that has done extraordinary things for this country, and he's now fallen in the company of some people to whom truth means nothing. That's you know, facts. We've come to a place in this country where people now don't trust other people saying what they do, what they believe, how they are, who they are. And it throws everything into a kind of tailspin. What do you do when the people that you have elected, who are supposedly the leaders and the intelligent and thoughtful and creative ones, turn out to be fakes? I have to go back to the thought that I think we're in deep trouble in this country, and people aren't realizing it yet.
We're talking with Mike Farrell here on Downtown. So what is the pathway forward? Obviously, people have to speak out and speak up, but how do we get those people back who believe in this alternate reality? And I don't think it's 50% or even 40%. I don't know what the numbers are, but there are certainly a large number of people out there who have become conditioned to believe in this this set of alternate facts and realities. Can we talk to those people, and how?
Well, I think we have to, but I think it's going to take a long time. For those, you know, it's a kind of a cult mentality, and that dealt with that to some degree in time and over time. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of explaining. But if we can get back to honest, honorable, thoughtful, caring people in leadership, it will help to solve this problem. And that's, I find myself kind of feeling torn about, you know, listening to the people in the opposing party today saying, you know, we've got to get it back. We got to get the control of the House, and we got to get control of the Senate. And when you give up things like when you allow Citizens United, the lawsuit to the court finding to allow people like Musk to buy a presidency, then, you know, we've got a lot of work to do to rebuild this country. But first, I think we just have to stop the trajectory of this this kind of tornado that is spewing garbage and lies and using its ability to make people more and more fearful. We've got to find ways to deal with that, and just have people look into themselves and say, do I really support this? Yes, I voted for him, but do I really support this business of this fellow being put in prison? God bless, may I say, Senator Chris Van Hollen for saying he's going to El Salvador.
Right.
Going to fight for the return of a citizen of his state. We need more of that kind of leadership and more demonstrations of the fact that this cannot be allowed to continue. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say there's still a small part of me, it's getting smaller every day, that believes too that if you can look people in the eye and talk to them, that yes, there are some differences, but perhaps not as profound as what we see when it's only expressed in the world of social media.
Yes, well said. I just was in a kind of a debate with a guy over, unfortunately, social media. But, you know, he accused me of being naive in my hopefulness. And I said, I get it. I get it that you think that, you know, it's hope is for fools or something. But I have to believe. I have to believe in a better future. I have to believe that people are decent, fundamentally decent. I have to believe that we, if we communicate as straightforwardly and as earnestly and as honestly as we can, that people hear that and they will at least give it some consideration. And then that's the first step. And if you start giving it consideration, then I think we're going to bring them back to a place where things like love and chair and honor and truth really are the basics, the sort of fundaments of who we are as people, and recognizing the value and the potential integrity of every individual rather than just thinking that there are those with a certain skin color or those with a certain religion or those with a certain sex, gender, are the ones that are the only ones that have the right answers.
It gets tiring, exhausting, trying to keep up and trying to deal with all. And a lot of people, including our friend Heather Cox Richardson, have said, "But you got to take a break and get away. You can't be reading 12 papers a day and not dealing with the things that bring you joy." So, what do you do for an escape from the realities of the world? Is it family? Is it books, music, art? What helps you get away?
It's a little of all of those things. You mentioned Heather Cox Richardson, and I know you know her, and you've had her on your show, and I read her zealously, jealously every day, and just thank the world if you have the opportunity to pass on my regard to her, for her. I would appreciate it. Those voices, her voice and some others that are out there, continue to remind us that it matters, you know, that we matter, that you matter, that people matter. So what I do is, you know, I keep trying to associate my thoughts with those folks and be in touch with, I lead an organization trying to end the death penalty, as you know, and I saw a movie, you know, a movie called The Men, oh, no, I'm not going to say it correctly. Manchurian, it's almost Manchurian, but it's not. Anyway, there's a movie on Netflix for those who might be interested in about the, and it's a true story of a man who was deemed a terrorist from a small sub-Asian country, and was sent to Guantanamo. And was treated the way those people were treated. And I kept thinking as I was watching this film, that's the story that all of us need to know, not just about the government's overreach and not about just about torture and not just about, it's about mindless dehumanization of another human being for a political purpose, for a purpose of gaining power. And it's what I think all of us who care see as the problem, this mindlessness, this rage and hatred and fury at this sense of how one, I don't have enough, or I don't have what I need, and somebody's going to take it away from me. It's a zero sum game that they want us to play. And so I associate myself with people like you, people who are smart, thoughtful, careful, intelligent, caring, and in little ways and in big ways, we make inroads, I think, when we make contact with people and with organizations and with, I don't care, religious beliefs, whatever it is that works for you. But there's got to be a return to a sense that not only do we matter, but they matter. Everybody matters. And that we've got to find a way to re-communicate that and dedicate ourselves to the idea that is the heaven that a lot of people dream about. That is the place where, the paradise where we can all survive in a way that serves us as well as them. I just read something recently about Donald Trump, and this person, the psychologist, said he cannot have a relationship with someone wherein each profits. It has to be he profits. He profits over whoever. He debates. He must. Because of his own mental issues, this malignant narcissistic personality syndrome that somebody has come up with, has labeled him, and I think it fits perfectly. But it's a requirement on his part that everybody else loses, because if they win, it takes something away from him, and exactly. He can't allow it.
By the way, I played Heather a little clip from the last time you were on with us, talking about how much you appreciated her work, and she was so touched by that.
Oh, isn't that sweet? I'm touched by knowing that it matters to her.
Well, I think that what we need to do sometime is get the two of you together on the show here, and we'll have a little three-part conversation.
I would love that.
Well, Mike, always appreciate your thoughts and insight and passion for us finding our way back to doing it the right way here in America.
Well, God bless you, Rich, for being there, and thank you for caring enough to reach out and want to talk. I'm happy to do that anytime.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, take care.